time again for No Filter Sports. Today is, as we record this show, August 17th, 2020. It'll be posted about 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And once again, we'll come to you with stories in sports. And we've got a lot of them today and a pretty interesting guest, too. But let's start with them.
I want to interject here. This is a surprise for you. Here's what I want to start with, and it won't take long. First thing I saw this morning, Monday morning, when I opened my Twitter account, and I will read this to you, what it said. What a chance to talk with Denny McClain. Now you can. Visit his website, DennyMcClain31.com, and schedule a Zoom call with Denny. He'll answer all your questions. It'll be a fun and memorable experience. And then there was a big picture of Denny posted on this in a senator's uniform being interviewed by an impossibly hot, what else, TV woman sports journalist. Denny, tell us more.
Well, I don't know what else to say, Bob. I mean, I'd like you to do this about five times during this next hour and a half.
Well, we got the sale, too, so he has a lot of stuff to plug.
We redid a bunch of our things over the last month or so, and we've just taken a new direction with our website and things like that, and it's working out pretty well. So having a lot of fun with a lot of people out there, and a lot of people. I think what's going to happen is, to be honest with you, I think Rose and I may do Zooms together and put groups together and answer the questions, talk baseball, football, gambling, of course, and things like that.
What will be the charge?
I have no idea. I have no idea. We're not there yet, but we're pretty close.
Have you been talking to Rose about this?
Of course. Are you kidding? who do you think I would call first?
Oh my God.
Then I want to mention another Twitter, which will lead us into our first topic. Evan Petzold, who's an intern, I guess, with the Free Press, tweeted right after that. Detroit Tigers general manager Al Avila has scheduled a Zoom meeting with the media for noon on Monday. Well, this is supposed to be about Casey Mize.
And
he ain't calling this to tell us that Mize isn't being called up. I guarantee you that much. So by the time we finish recording this program, we should be able to get that information to you.
I was told yesterday that Mr. Mize is going to make an appearance within a very, very short period of time.
So, thank God for that.
Yes, I could not say that any stronger than what you just did.
Ivan Nova on the disabled list Saturday, right triceps tendonitis. So Casey,
Eli, a question for you then. I want you because I've got this right down here too. Why would Avila sign bleeping Ivan Nova? This guy has an 8.53 ERA.
They all do.
In 19 innings, cross. What does this guy bring to the table that he's so important?
So far, more than Matthew Boyd.
And well, you're right about that. He's a young and he's got a past performance with Detroit.
And listen, almost everybody else. I mean, they got the starter ERA is over eight and a half or something like that. Boyd is in double digits still. Guys are giving up home runs in this ballpark like it's batting practice. I mean, hey, listen, it's one thing to give up a 375 foot home run. They're hitting 450-foot home runs against this pitching staff. I mean, look at what happened in Chicago yesterday, four in a row. And then I don't know if Brandon can look it up. Brandon, I gave up four home runs in a row one night in Baltimore. Can you check it?
Really?
Yeah, I think so. I know I gave up three in a row.
I know Boog Powell hit one of them.
Well, that was against the Cardinals, though. It wasn't against the Tigers yesterday.
No, I understand that. But they gave up four home runs yesterday, didn't they? Four or five?
Five. They gave up five yesterday.
I'll tell you what. When I was a boy, I remember watching on TV when there was I don't know if you knew him, Denny. There was a major league catcher. Eli and I had all his baseball cards named Gene Green. And yeah, Gene Green hit a home run over the dead center 440 mark at Tiger Stadium. And I was in awe because I'd never seen such a thing. That ball that kid hit yesterday, it just was a rocket launch. They said 453. It looked like about 493 to me. It was amazing.
In the years I played in Detroit, I gave up one home run to straight center field, and you'll never guess who hit it.
Okay, we won't.
We can't.
Joe Pepitone. He almost hit the facade of the upper deck 440 feet away.
Yeah. I saw Bobo Osborne hit one way up there, but it was a little more towards right center. And of course, Cecil Fielder. We're trying to get on the show later this week. Cecil hits some bombs up there, But
was he the last one to hit one over left field? You know, fewer went over the left field roof than the right field roof. The left field roof was harder to hit it over. I remember he hit one over there and walked up on top of it and kind of looked over. It was kind of a little TV story.
Did you ever see one, Eli, go over the roofs?
Oh, yeah.
Where, in Detroit?
I did.
In right
field. Were you there in person? In person.
Hang on a minute. Right field, yes. Yeah. No one ever cleared the left field wall, the left field roof.
Well, nobody bounced off the roof and went
Frank
over.
Frank Howard did.
Frank Killebrew did not. He bounced over. I was there. Mickey Lolich threw the pitch, and it bounced over. One big bounce halfway up the roof.
Okay, well, all right.
Willie Horton also got one that went over the roof, but it rolled to finish his roll. And there was one other guy with Harmon Killebrew.
Cecil.
I was sitting in the press box one night, just a typical ball game, and Lewis happened to be up, and so Whitaker hit a ball, long drive to right, and it just kept driving, rising, and I couldn't. It cleared the roof in right field. Were you there that night? And this the only one I ever saw. It was majestic.
Right field is a chip shot.
Yeah.
Clear the roof, it's not.
Well, whatever. It happened a bunch. It happened a bunch. It happened about 25 times.
It happened more than that, for God's sake. Sure. I probably gave up 25 of them.
And Paul Foytak probably gave up 5, especially in a mantle.
That's right. Yeah, Mickey used to kill him.
Here's what's goofy. The Tigers have now, by the way, the Tigers have lost 20 straight. To lose 20 straight to one baseball team. And you know, we kind of made fun a little bit of my good friend and colleague down the street from me here in Bloomfield Hills, Matt Shepard, and his incredibly over-the-top, enthusiastic home run calls. However, this was his call yesterday when the game-ending double play that ensured a series sweep and the 20th straight loss to the Indians.
Here's the 0-1. On the ground to second, Hernandez flips to Lindor. And the double play is turned, and that's how Cleveland sweeps the series.
Dun, 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 dun.
However,
30 seconds later, he was praising him again.
Hold on now. The Tigers are 9-10, despite getting swept. They are still in the playoff field. They are the 7th place team in the American League. So as they would qualify for the playoffs, and in this crazy season, something insane or crazy will happen, like the Tigers making the playoffs after 114 losses, or how about the 12-9 Orioles that lost over 100 games last year as well? They lost to Max Scherzer on Sunday. They're another team that was given a 0% chance. The odds makers on the 162-game season that now, like the Tigers, have a chance, and that other first-place team called the Florida Marlins also.
Because it's so short. I ripped the Marlins recently. So, you know, they're having a good season so far. Again, so what, except for the 60-game thing. Now, Mr. McClain, I have a pitching question for you, and this comes from Saturday's game. So Turnbull's pitching for the Tigers. No score, top of the third. Man on, nobody out. It's a 3-2 pitch to Mercado. This guy is not just the number 9 hitter in the Cleveland lineup. He was 3 for his last 30. Yeah. What would Denny McClain do? Throw him a fastball. Just get him out of there. Instead, he throws a cutesy cut fastball for ball 4, way outside, and this leads to the Tribe's first 2 runs of the game. Pitching has changed, Denny.
Well, it's not the idea that the pitch was a bad idea. He just didn't throw a strike. I mean, listen.
Just throw him a fastball. It's easy to get it over.
Well, it's easy to get it over, but it's also supposed to be relatively easy for a major league pitcher to get a cutter over, to get a curveball over, and to get a slider and a changeup over. But on the other hand, if they don't work on it, they can't perfect it. They can't get it where it can throw 75 or 80% of the time you throw it for a strike. And that's what the ratio is supposed to be. 70 to 80% of the time you're supposed to be able to get your pitches over the strike in the strike zone. These kids don't throw enough in order to command what they do anymore. The guys that we see really stand out are exceptional talents today. We don't have a lot of mediocre pitchers that really know how to pitch. So the guys that we see, you know, the Scherzers and guys like that, are classified in such a high esteem that we forget about these other kids who can't throw strikes on a regular basis.
Okay, another pitching question for you. I watched the Tigers game Sunday on ESPN. Rick Sutcliffe was one of the commentators. Yeah. And Sutcliffe brought up, he said, look at the pitcher injuries. Sutcliffe said, quote, you had to know there'd be a lot of injuries to pitchers with the start, the stop, the start again. And he started to name names. Kershaw, JV, yeah. Kluber, Soroka, Charlie Morton, Otani, even the Tigers, Buck Farmer. They're all out. They're all hurt. What's up with that?
Two spring trainings. The second spring training was too short. Guys did not see what I think happened. The guys who are really who really respect the game and love the game and are going to be a part of the game for a while are the guys who worked out every day between the two spring trainings. I think they busted their ass getting themselves ready for the possibility of playing this second season. The problem is the other kids who didn't, they were told probably to lay it off for a while, lay back a little bit. And they absolutely took it to heart and did not go out there and throw. You have to throw to build it up. You have to throw to make things happen. And if they're all going out there, and I'll tell you this too, yesterday I watched quite a bit of the game. I've never seen so many breaking balls being tossed in baseball games as I've seen the last couple of weeks. About 65% of the pitches that I saw yesterday were breaking balls.
But they're working, Danny. They're working. The strikeouts are so way up. Strikeouts are so high.
Check the ERA. Check everything. It's not working. It is not working.
Anyway, you talked about not working.
Let me interject one thing.
Okay.
We have football games in a baseball park right now. All the scores are indicative of football scores.
Not quite. They lost 8-5. So,
okay, Eli, I got another question for you then. Go ahead. I got another question for you. Same question I asked you a moment ago. On Sunday, with the Tigers losing 7-4, Gardy brought in Carson Fulmer. Why? Why did they sign him? Why is he on the ball club? First hitter. Reyes hit that 453-foot home run. Incredible that some of the decisions they've made.
Calm down. They make decisions based on finance. Ivan Nova fit a salary slot, and they figured maybe he's got something left and he can.
How about based on winning? They could do that.
How about C.J. Crone? Why'd they get C.J. Crone? Well, he's a pretty good player, and he was in the $6 million category, and they got him. Of course, he's gone now for the season. So that's why. There's a pool out there. You know what? Whether you get a cheap player or an expensive one, like Mike Ilitch said about Prince Fielder, that was the price range to get 30 homers and 110 RBIs. You have to pay him $214 million. You get less than that for $6 or $7 million, and that's why they're buying these guys. Can we please move on? When I said crazy stuff.
We can move on, but I got another question for you right here, Eli, okay? This is my nomination for the quote of this past weekend. I will read it to you. I really like Gardenhire. I really like him, but I'm beginning to think that Ron Gardenhire is the wrong guy in the wrong place at the wrong time. Who said that?
You may be right.
Denny McClain said that on Cameron's show Saturday afternoon. I was listening along with nine other people.
And I was a big promoter of him. And I'm disappointed the way he's handled the pitching. I really am. And he's supposed to be great with the pitchers. Maybe, you know what? The opposite side of what I just said is maybe we don't have any pitchers.
You know, it's hard to make managerial decisions, meaning who you're going to hire in your management, to be right. So maybe Gardenhire is the wrong guy for this team. But I would like to move on and talk about another amazing managerial hire, and that goes into the NBA, which, by the way, let's give credit to the NBA and the NHL. Zero COVID infections in both leagues since they started playing.
Right.
The bubble works. And at this point, I would like to say kudos to the best commissioner in all of sports. That's Adam Silver, who was up against it. He loses his mentor, David Stern, before the season. He loses Kobe Bryant before the season. He loses $2 billion in China when Daryl Morey of Houston supports human rights there. He gets the pandemic, and then he gets Kyrie Irving saying, let's cancel the season. Here's a player saying, none of us should want to play. Let's blow it off. No infections. Playoffs start tonight. Their games looked the closest, even though they got the goofy the fans in the background, the digital images. But the games have been pretty competitive, and so I give credit to them. And yesterday,
but you told me you weren't watching the games. You didn't like what's going on in the NBA.
I read from the little I've seen, they've been very competitive because now the playoffs start, and I can start watching. It's the same with an 82 game season. I watch very little of the regular season, especially since the Pistons have been unwatchable for the last 12 years. One of the reasons they've been unwatchable for the last 12 years is the series of blundering moves that Joe Dumars made after being brilliant the first few years and getting the team to the Eastern Conference Finals six seasons in a row before a series of mind-numbing signings, whether it was Charlie Villanueva, whether it was Darko Milicic, whether it was Ben Gordon, or whether it was the disastrous Josh Smith in 2013, who after just a little over a year, Stan Van Gundy said, I don't care that you gave him $54 million. I ain't playing him anymore because he's killing us. They were 5-23 at the time. And now, as my good friend Pete Skorich, who hired me to work for the Pistons, the former ball boy from Cobo Arena, said to me when I joined the Pistons, he said, never try and make any sense. Don't rack your brain ever to try and figure out why anything happens in the NBA. The firings and hirings come and go. It's mind-boggling. Let it go. So the Sacramento Kings, now who haven't made the playoffs in another mind-numbing 14 years, have Joe Dumars replacing Vlade Divac, who stepped down, and Dumars he's up for consideration to become the full-time GM. It's taken him 5 years to get back into the game in any significant way to let all those blunders kind of fade into the ether.
Yeah, just one thing to add. The Lakers are favored slightly, and it's going to be interesting because nobody's picking anybody else but Portland. Do they still play defense in Portland?
Portland's Damon Lillard, man. They are good. Hey,
speaking of Portland, Danny, I recorded that game the other night against Memphis. We got to go to a break. I just want to say this, that I started watching it and I saw all the Black Lives Matter, shirts and what they're wearing. And then when the over coverings. Then when they took those off, they each had individual social political statements, whatever they wanted on the back of their uniforms. I was a gym rat. I'm a basketball junkie. And I thought, I want to see basketball, the best players in the world. I don't want to see this stuff. I turned it off. Never watched.
Well, that's a little bit of a reaction. You could have just watched the game.
A lot of people like me.
I agree with you, too. I think the social media, the social stuff is wrong. It's misplaced.
Wait a minute. Why did both of you think it's wrong?
I want to see basketball, Danny.
It doesn't affect the game of basketball.
Exactly. Bob. You're getting emotional about it. I understand you disagree with it, but you can still watch them dribble and shoot and do all that. The fact is that the messages,
I'm trying to read what they've written on the back of their uniforms. Yeah. Shot. I was trying to read what the guy had on the back.
By the way, as you said, Dr. Yaldo is open again and doing what he's done for tens of thousands of Detroiters, giving them freedom from glasses, contacts, reading glasses, all that ancient technology, get rid of it. Ben Franklin wore glasses, for God's sakes. We have come so far past that, and contacts are a royal pain in the you-know-what. So why not get perfect eyesight, better than 20/20 most patients do, without glasses and contacts? That's custom LASIK, as Dr. Yaldo delivers. And if you're over 45, like just about everybody listening, ask about multifocal lens exchange. I got that with my cataracts. See the microscopic print without reading glasses. Your far vision will be high def HD for the rest of your life. These surgeries are the safest, fewest side effects in all of medicine. Get a free evaluation. Find out which procedure will change your life ways only can imagine. All you do is call 1-800-398-EYES or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. Tell them No Filter Sports sent you. You'll get some special discounts. And I'm also here for Star Lincoln. Lincoln's legacy of luxury cars plays out at Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln. Buying a Lincoln, you can demand that both the buying and the service elements are unequaled, and that's what you'll get at Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln. An incredible family business, exemplary it is. In July alone, Star got nearly 100 five-star reviews. Here's a couple. One woman writes, my entire experience was more than wonderful. Another praises the business manager down to the service, an example of premier customer service. I've gotten 6 cars from Star, Detroit's premier Lincoln dealership. Make an appointment. Call 248-354-4900 or by effortlessly online. That is effortlessly online at starlincoln.com. You're listening. Boy, that was tough. For the you're listening to the No Filter.
My God, what's the matter with you today? You're so excited about going out of town. Huh?
I'm on my way after this. After this. By the way, before I go, we're going to talk to Rich Stranger. Rich Stranger played for the U of M. He was a star offensive lineman, all Big Ten, honorable mention, All-American. He's a lawyer now in Lake Orion, and we're going to talk to him about, this is my theory, and we can talk about it now if you would like, that this cancellation of college football in the Big Ten and the Pac-12 that's getting a lot of pushback, and maybe justifiably so, is more than just the COVID. It is the fact that the players were organizing under three major groups. One was called We Want to Play. One was called We Are United. One was called the College Athletic Unity Group that featured the Big Ten and Michigan players. And it was an effort to get not just protections health-wise about COVID and everything else, but it was also to move the ball forward as is being tried, as being attempted. The NCAA is supposed to give recommendations to Congress in January about how to empower players and not and make them more than student athletes that are unpaid. And this, in the view of some materials that I sent you guys over the weekend that I completely agree with, is really basic union busting. Now, Denny.
Yeah, you're forgetting one thing, and I agree with everything you just said. Let's say you play at Michigan or Michigan State or wherever, and you had a good but not great junior season. This is the year that you can break out, have a great season, and make yourself millions of dollars in the NFL draft.
Right.
But you ain't going to play no football this year.
Everyone wants to play. The players want to play. The fans want to see it. People telling me, I can't believe I can't tailgate.
I understand.
This is awful. What?
But you know what this is all about. Come on now. I mean, this isn't that they just want to play. They want to play for a reason. They want to show their wares. They want to show how good they
That's
are.
That's what I said.
They want to get, yeah, like Bob said, they want that multi-million dollar contract. The parents going to Chicago to the Big Ten offices the other day and delivering a letter,
yep,
from several universities. I mean, this is silly stuff. I mean, do you really want to put your child in harm's way? I can't believe it. I can't believe, I'm going to say it one more time, I can't believe they can't wait a couple of months and start in the spring when something good has happened by then.
Yeah, I was hoping you'd bring that up. I was hoping you'd bring that up again, because you've been saying that, and you make a lot of sense on the surface. You've been saying on the show, what's the rush? What's the rush? Let's wait. And yet, Denny, on the last show, in your next breath, you said, folks, this stuff's not going away. People are going to be wearing masks 1 year from now. So what do we do, Denny? Do we cancel the next 2 years then? Do we risk not playing for the next 3 years? What do you want to do?
But I didn't finish my comment the other day. Yes, I believe this is going to be around for a while. But I also believe the vaccine is coming. One, two, or three different kinds of vaccines.
Yeah, I hope so.
Able
I think
to get,
so. I agree
and
with
they're
that.
Going to be able to maintain or knock out or do something that we can at least live in our society the way we once did. Maybe the mask, maybe not. But if, in fact, they don't come up with the big one, it's going to be masked for a long time.
Denny, when you played, and there were several strikes during your career, as there have been after, well-publicized and well-known, one thing management tried to do, which happens in all businesses, whether it's Walmart or whatever it is, you divide the employees from those that really need to work, from those that can maybe afford not to and want to push the unionization part. And then you get people to cross a picket line, and happen in baseball. This is exactly what's happening in college football now. Of course, Justin Fields wants to play. Of course, the starters with the
chance
to
draft give us want to play. Eli, give us that story about Justin Fields. You just mentioned Justin Fields.
Justin Fields,
quarterback, started a petition requesting the Big Ten immediately reinstate the coming season. Now, I saw on ESPN as of last night, he had 175,000 signatures on this, and I'm sure it's way beyond that now. But people want to see college football.
Justin Fields,
they're not playing,
and Trevor Lawrence are willing to take the risk of catching COVID or getting sick because there's a greater agenda for them. I contend that the backup player, the backup offensive lineman or quarterback that won't make the NFL is a lot more worried about this. So, yeah, Justin Fields will take that chance. The others may not want to. And this is all about the fact that if it's pushed through and they play, then the player is going to be forced to either play with a waiver saying that they're not going to, or they're going to divide them. Half the players won't come at all, and the ones that have a chance to make the NFL will, and you'll have 30 guys on a team, because that's what Fields says. He said we should have a chance on our own to decide if we want to play or not, or opt out of the season. And
listen, this is the inmates taking over the asylum. This is not supposed to happen. This has been great for the kids all during their careers. This has been great for the NCAA for many, many years. This works. This is a great plan. They get to they get to show off their wares. Let them stay within the window. Let us not do something silly. God forbid we have another surge. Do you know where that puts us? Puts us deep into next year.
It's all tied to the students going to school. And if there's students on campus, then the football players are in greater danger, assuming they go to class, to being with everybody else. But there's no classes anyway. So, yeah, I think they could play. I think it probably is worth the risk. What will happen for some. But it'll
Eli is going to play. I mean, tonight they're having them a news conference. SEC going to announce they're playing. SEC going to give us a schedule tonight. So conferences are playing, and that might put some pressure on the Big Ten, for instance, to revisit.
So Eli, you think that because they're going to play football that they will stay away from everybody and quarantine themselves? Okay. Listen, by the way, there may be 30,000 men in a college setting, and there may be another 35,000 ladies in the same setting. Now, do you really think they're going to stay away from each other? I'm sorry, folks. It's not going to happen.
Is it not curious that it was the Big Ten and the Pac-12 that formed the two the push to make a players union with the college athlete unity group, and on the West Coast it was the We Are United. Those conferences knew they couldn't put the players on the field without agreeing to certain protocols that might have risked the university having to spend more money to support them in years to come. The three other conferences that don't have the same level of activism are going to go ahead and play. And so this is basically dividing and conquering, in that you're going to let the guys that really need to play come and play, and the other guys that don't want to get sick are going to stay home.
And there's another issue here that nobody's broached, and that is, not being an attorney myself, of course, you do see these avisos, these advertisements, let's say outside a zoo, don't go near the alligators, leave the bears alone. And somebody does, some idiot, and they're injured or killed, and you know what happens? They sue anyway, and they have a lawyer claim, well, that's not a binding contract.
Right.
So if any of these kids, you know, do come down as positive for COVID, and heaven forbid if anybody would die, which I doubt, the waivers legally might not mean a thing. They could go ahead and sue anyway.
I'll tell you one thing, though. We've had over 400,000 children now have got the virus in the last month or 5 weeks. That is a lot of, and originally, remember, the kids couldn't get it, or the kids had such great ability physically that they could fight it off. Well, we've learned different now, haven't we?
Well, how many of those, first of all, I don't know if that figure is correct, but how many died?
It is correct, Bob.
How many died, Denny, out of 400,000?
I know there's been a couple that have died.
A couple out of 400,000, really? Okay, fine.
Well, now, the deaths are reported late, so we'll hear about the deaths.
Okay.
There are many opinions. Listen, doctors, as a Power 5 athletic director said, doctors don't agree. There's multiple answers to the same questions. And we don't know, for example, I could put a mask on and go into a restaurant, and then I can sit down at a table and take that mask off and sit with my people. And 15 feet away, there are other people eating that I don't know, and with poor ventilation, who knows? But I'm not allowed to go outside and go to a baseball game I'd have to wear a mask there. So we're guessing at all this. And my point is, if all these college players want to play and the schools can protect them in a way that they feel is fair and protects them, let them go play.
Yeah. And now here comes this woman doctor. Eli, you might remember her name, or Denny. I think she was in the Trump administration. She gets a lot of publicity, like you know, the other guy, Fauci, whenever she opens her mouth.
Dr. Birx.
She's quoted this weekend as having reached a decision.
Birx.
And she, yeah, yes. Okay, Birx, okay. She's quoted this weekend as saying that from now on, because of the fears of COVID-19, you need to wear a mask inside the privacy of your own home at all times.
That's insanity.
It is.
Well, I think the science has settled real well. And what I mean by that, Eli brought it up. You can't attend a game. You cannot attend a game for fear of this thing spreading again and again. I think that answers all of the questions. I really do.
Okay. So now many people are saying that the only way the college basketball season can be saved is to go to the bubble concept Eli mentioned that seems to be working really well for the NBA and the NHL. But you're playing a long season and campuses are spread out everywhere. These kids are theoretically student athletes and supposed to be going to classes. How's that going to work for college basketball? How are you going to have a bubble for college basketball?
You're going to love this. The Cardinals now are trying to use vehicles to transport their players, the St. Louis Cardinals. I bring this up because I'm talking about distancing. When the Cardinals were told they could play again over the weekend, every player got a driver, and 61 cars were in a convoy going to Chicago in order to play the games this weekend. 61 cars, one player per car with a driver.
I got good news for you, Cardinal fans. They're 4-4 now. Most teams have played 20 games. They've managed to play, but percentage-wise, they are in the playoffs.
Yeah,
500. They and they said that's going to happen. You know, that
we talked about this, and I've said there has to be a minimum number of games, like minimum number of at-bats to qualify for the batting championship.
Would you love to see them finish 6-4 and make the playoffs, and then everybody gets healthy on time, or they take the 30 guys from the minor leagues, and they come and win the World Series? Go ahead, Bob.
I'd like to see some team go 12-2 and say they can't play in the playoffs. You know what? The thing that surprised, I think, so many of us about what's going on with COVID is the economy and the stock market have been doing great. A lot of people are buying new cars. And if you need one, I'm here to tell you that Feldman Automotive is Michigan's number one Chevy dealer. They've got 5 locations, Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, and Highland. And in fact, they've got 9 locations total, including Feldman Hyundai of New Hudson, Feldman Kia of Novi, Feldman's Dodge, Jeep, and Ram of Woodhaven, and Michigan's top-rated pre-owned supercenter in Waterford, known simply as 1-800-PRE-OWNED. Buy a fully inspected and guaranteed pre-owned auto from Feldman, and then just relax with their exclusive drive it for 3 days, love it or bring it back guarantee. It's can't-lose proposition, folks. And Feldman also has an unmatchable kicker. They will guarantee you credit approval. So we're proud and confident that you can find what you need at one of Feldman's 9 locations. Let them earn your business and at the same time support us. And don't forget, you can also buy a car from them online at FeldmanAuto.com, hassle-free. And we also encourage you to consider Power Home Solar, America's fastest growing solar energy company. All of Power Home Solar's state-of-the-art panels are made in America. With solar energy, you save money, you help save the environment, also help yourself avoid those costly and incredibly infuriating power outages. That's because Power Home Solar has partnered with Generac, the nation's largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems. With Power Home Solar's panels and Generac, you're going to be protected by a single, safe, sustainable solution for your in-home energy needs. Yeah, lower your energy bills and eliminate power outages forever. Owner Jason Waller and Power Home Solar have financing. It starts at just $99 a month. You call them at 1-800-POWER-90, and you'll save an additional $1,800. And you're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
I want to say one thing about a guy that has made a miraculous comeback. Alex Smith has been released from medical, and he is back on the field today. You remember? I don't know if you remember when this happened in November of 18, and when he broke his tibia and fibula. He's had 17 surgeries since then, and they brought him out on the field this morning to introduce him, and he had all kinds of contraptions, and he thinks he's going to play, believe it or not.
Who's
I can't believe you could take responsibility for putting him on the field again.
Yeah. Hey, I don't know. It's just a little factoid, trivia kind of thing. Alex Smith also has the highest Wunderlich intelligence test score ever administered by the NFL. Just curious.
His injury led to Patrick Mahomes, didn't he? He was with the Chiefs when Mahomes came in and changed the face.
By the way, doesn't Fields look like Mahomes?
Hard to say.
At that level, I guess.
With the band around the hair. I thought he was his twin brother the other day.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, we have something highly unusual happening on the program today, folks, and that is that Eli broached a story to me over the weekend that he was utterly fascinated by about the NHL. Tuukka Rask, the Boston goaltender. Go ahead, Eli.
Well, Tuukka Rask just said, I'm done. He's in the playoffs. And, you know, some of the things he said I thought were really poorly stated. He has every right to leave in the bubble, but he said at this moment, there are things, and by the way, he and the backup goalie, Halleck, is it Yaroslav Halleck, led the league in terms of goals allowed. Rask was a Vezina Trophy winner last year. He's an incredible goalie, and this year had a 2.12 goals per game. He decided it was enough. He said,
"Yeah, I think Halleck took away some of his playing time, so I think that also pissed too."
I think he started poorly in the playoffs. But here's the thing, you know, this is a fact of life. When you have money, you can make personal decisions that people without money can't make. We know that with the frontline workers, with the people that have to, you know, risk their lives to make $10, $12, $50 an hour, whatever it is. And so he signed an 8-year, $56 million deal. He's made most of it. He has one more season after this and just kind of got bored with it. What he said, it really doesn't feel like playoff hockey out there after they lost 3-2 to Carolina. He goes, there are no fans. It's kind of like playing an exhibition game. It just feels dull at times. Well, you shouldn't pee over the whole league because you want to leave. I think that's the bad way.
If he says that, but here's an analogy for you. Okay. I've said this so many times. It's just true. There'd be no show here without Eli Zarrett. Okay. Danny and I are great. That's fine. But there's no show without Eli. What if Eli suddenly stands up and says, yeah, I'm bored. I don't want to do this. Show's over. Thanks, fellas. Danny and our engineer, Brandon McAfee, and I wouldn't be happy about that. How can you leave us in the lurch like this? And here's a guy who leaves his team in the middle of the playoffs on Saturday afternoon, citing, quote, family reasons. That's
whether
what he said.
Well, he's got a newborn, but even if the backup is playing well, you need two goaltenders. So yeah,
He screwed his teammates.
100%.
How about my guy in Chicago the other day, huh? Yesterday, 48 saves, wins 2-1, huh? How about that, boys? Huh?
Okay.
Look out! My Blackhawks are coming again. I can't pull for the Red Wings. They're sleeping.
Anyway, you know what Rask did, which was mentally check out, is the last thing a player is allowed to do. You got to play through your personal issues, through injuries if you have to, through whatever's going on in the world. You have an obligation to your team. So a very, very dubious decision.
It was very strange. And I want to ask you guys the same question we just were discussing about the NBA. How many people are watching? Brandon, I have not seen any TV ratings.
Ratings are low. I think they're low. I think they're very bad.
Are they low? Okay.
What, NBA? NBA?
NHL? NBA.
I meant the NBA because that's what Donald Trump said. Ratings are low. And
okay.
They are.
So now the Islanders are having an amazing run here, even without Detroit native Dougie Waite, whom they fired as coach recently or last year. So the Islanders shut out. Or they beat Ovi and the Caps in overtime on Sunday. Must have been a hell of a game. New York's now leading the Caps 3-0. I didn't watch the game. Normally I would if it were hockey season. It's not hockey season.
Well, that's a problem. No doubt about it. Now, I'd like to throw a little bouquet out to Kelly Stafford, and I'm going to tell you.
Oh, you know what? Look at what I got in front of me.
Yeah, you know, I always thought she was kind of a little mouthy. I mean, she's tweeting all the time, and she's posting on Instagram and all the family stuff and everything about Matthew. And I thought, you know, she's just a little too chatty for me. But I give her a lot of credit. And one of the reasons I am, and I'm going to, it's because of what she's doing about social activism at Georgia. She and her husband, Matt, have thrown $350,000 to Georgia for social justice education. The most disappointing thing to me about the whole Black Lives Matter is the lunatics on the fringe that give everybody a chance to say it's BS. the people who are looting, the people, as you pointed, Bob, I hadn't seen that story at the time, that it's reparations, garbage. This is for equality. This is for all the things that have been fought for. And it's a shame to see the lunatics give the racists, let's put it that way, agreement, the chance to say it's all a bunch of BS. It's all about something else. Now she said, which is the same thing Drew Brees did, and I gave Drew Brees tremendous credit. He listened and he changed his mind and he said, I had been wrong. And that's what Kelly did. She said about the Kaepernick kneeling. She had strong feelings about it. She said, I didn't listen. I thought it had to do with the flag or the military. It doesn't. And now I've opened my eyes, my ears, my heart, and see how wrong I was for that. I am sorry. Good for you, Kelly.
I'm sure she's a lovely lady, but I mean, I don't care what the wife of any player in sports says. Why does she get so much media coverage?
Well, that's a good question.
Stafford's she happens to be the wife of the quarterback with the Detroit
so
Lions.
What?
And Because
they just did something that's newsworthy.
If you're the wife, it's newsworthy.
That's why. If she said nothing in the past, she has a right to say this.
And three years ago, no one's debating her right to say this.
Listen,
and it's only newsworthy because some reporters said it was newsworthy. That's what I'm saying. It's not newsworthy.
Well, everybody who's made a donation to a university around the country has got all kinds of promotion for it, no matter who it is. They've donated money to their alma maters, and the checks go, and the checks get flaunted, the checks get promoted, and they try to make, you know, they promote themselves in a great way. And if they're really serious by putting the money up, the bottom line simply is that's even better. I think a lot of guys write checks just to write checks to make them look better. So I applaud her if in fact, but she acted like a lot of other people, millions of other people, when he took a knee. We all misunderstood what he was doing that day. Every one of us, and there isn't one of us here sitting here today.
Well, I don't agree.
Say
with
otherwise.
That.
You didn't.
Denny, he said at the time what the reason.
Yes, he did, but nobody paid attention.
Didn't want to believe him. People didn't want to believe him. So,
right.
And I give her further credit because it's very easy now to trash Black Lives Matter because of a lot of the negative publicity it's gotten and some of the bad messages that have arisen from it, including looting and stuff like that and reparations. Reparations is a whole other story from Black Lives Matter. Anyway.
And by the way, since we're on the subject of the NFL with them, you know, in camp and opening the season, I'm going to ask the same question of the NFL that I've asked of the other sports. Do they have a plan? Do they have a plan in place? Because one of those guys in the NFL, or a lot more, they're going to test positive for COVID-19. Well, at some point, they are. So Denny's beloved Bears are playing my beloved New York Giants on Sunday, 1 o'clock kickoff. Overnight, two of the Giants players test positive. Would the NFL then do what baseball has done? Would they say, okay, Giants-Bears game 4 hours from now is off. It's called off. Do they have a plan?
Well, I'm glad to hear it's not the Bears.
Both leagues, meaning Major League Baseball and the NFL, don't have the same level of trust that the NBA has with its players, and maybe the NHL too, because they did not agree to the bubble. If baseball suggested the bubble, and it's worked perfectly for the NHL and the NBA, it hasn't worked perfectly for baseball. They've done a pretty good job regardless. We'll see how it goes in football. They didn't agree to a bubble, and these are the risks that you have when you're traveling across the country, etc. We'll see how it goes. Nobody knows. Wait a second.
Baseball didn't agree to a full bubble. I mean, they did not want to spend the billions of dollars that it takes to maintain that bubble. And if you believe what the NBA says, it's costing them $3-4 billion to maintain that bubble on a regular basis.
Yeah, $1.5 million a day to keep the bubble.
And Denny, the point you made about the COVID vaccine presumably coming hopefully very soon.
Soon.
What's the NBA going to do next year? They can't have a bubble with every team involved, with 82 games in the season, with you not being allowed to see your family.
Right.
What are they going to do then? Is there a plan there?
The doctors that I talk to say that things are pretty much going to stay the same until there's a vaccine.
Right.
It may bump up a little, bump down a little bit, but we are on hold here. And this is what it's going to be. 1,000 people a day or 1,500 a day are going to be dying for the next period of time until we get a vaccine. And if it comes within a year's time, which would have been, you know, because we actually start working on it in March or February, whenever it was, that would be astounding.
Hang on one second. Are you going to do another commercial?
No, I'm going to do this day in sports because we got seven minutes left in the show.
Hang on a minute before we do a day in sports.
Before we get to Rich Stringer.
The Green Bay Packers sent out a questionnaire and asked all of their fans with tickets, are you going to opt in or opt out? 80% of the Green Bay Packers decided to opt out.
Really?
For this year.
Fans to go to games? 80%
of the fans, you mean.
Out. Yeah. The fans, right. Yeah. 80%. Well,
yeah. What would you have done if it was 80,000 people in the stands? I think I would have done without masks required. I would have done the same thing.
Me too.
I don't need to jump into that.
I agree. Well, you know my thinking, and I don't want to jump into that either.
So, in other words, you would let me ask you a question. Seriously,
I don't want to jump into this. Yes,
no,
I do.
It's a yes or no question.
And I got a question.
Would you go sit next? Let me finish. Would you sit next to people you don't know in a bleacher at a football game this fall without masks on?
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Bob, then let me ask you this question. Will you go to a Giants or Jets game when they let you in and be our test child?
He can't.
Sure.
He can't afford a ticket, Denny. Hey, on this day in 1920, we talked about this recently. This is the day that Ray Chapman of the Indians was hit in the head by Carl Mays,
died the
next day. And that next day, which would have been today, the Yankees canceled the game with the Indians in memory of Chapman. And I've talked to you about Sports Illustrated, the favorite magazine of my youth. It began this day in 1954. I started reading it in 1963. Baseball player Richie Ashburn on this day fouled off a ball and hit fan Alice Roth twice in the same game. At the same at-bat, he broke her nose. They put her on a stretcher, fell off another pitch that hit her while she was on the stretcher. Pardon me for laughing.
We can laugh about it now.
Eli, you're going to make us believe that you didn't buy the magazine for the beach layout with the models?
They didn't start doing that till 1964.
You were there then. You know about that.
In 1969, I remember this. The Jets beat the Giants 37-14, their first meeting. Don't forget, the merger happened the next year, or that year they played an exhibition game. It was huge in New York. The Jets and the Giants are finally going to play.
And I want to do my own little this day in sports, and the only sports connection involved in it is Pete Manley, who I think a lot of you folks remember was a wideout with the Lions. Mm-hmm. On this day in 1987, Pete Manley and his family had tickets to go on that fateful plane that left Metro Airport in Detroit, but his daughter got sick the previous day and they canceled the flight, which killed how many people? 150. I mean, that's the darkest day maybe in the entire history of Southeast Michigan. And I know it's like the Kennedy assassination. Brandon was too young, of course, for this, but where were you guys? Where were you guys when you heard the news that the flight had crashed at Metro?
What year was that?
87.
You don't remember?
I was in New York at the time, but I remember reading about it. I don't remember where I was.
I was in my house in Detroit on the Northwest Side, and
I have no idea.
Watching Bill Bonds, you know, the great Bill Bonds. Man, what a nightmare day.
This day in 1945, and I've tried to get some research on this. Scheduled demonstrations at the Polo Grounds and Ebbets Field to end segregation and organized baseball were called off. Of course, the war had just ended, or maybe the bomb had just been dropped on Hiroshima, maybe right around this time. So that could have been why that was called off. And on this day in 1967, that's when Tony Conigliaro was beaned by the Angels. Terrible. Jack Hamilton ending his career. Terrible. And on this day in 2002, remember Rich Beam? Rich Beam, as opposed
to Gary golfer, Woodland. Beamer.
Rich Beam, as of course, was a one-hit wonder, beat Tiger Woods by a stroke to win the PGA and was never heard from.
Okay, I'm sure you guys watched. I really didn't. That kid, whatever his name is, who won the big golf tournament on Sunday, is he a one-timer, flash in the pan? What do you think of him?
Well, the kid was 2 weeks ago. That was
him. No. Yesterday, the
42-year-old Jim Herman has won before.
There you go. Yeah. What do you think about that guy?
He's good enough. He's a fringe player. He had won a tournament in the past. It can happen on a particular event. He just played out of his mind and won by a stroke or two.
You know, it's like a guy striking out 17 guys like Gibson the one day in the World Series. It's one of those moments. It's just one of those moments, and a guy gets hot. Stays consistent, and lo and behold, you've set a record.
Bad analogy, though, comparing him to Bob Gibson, because Bob Gibson won, 250 games otherwise.
But he only struck out 17 once, and I know who the other pitcher was.
Go ahead,
the pitcher.
Me,
you.
Oh,
you.
Oh, of course, game one of the World Series. I got it. Hey,
to take a famous quote from Eli Zerrett. Is that all? Is it done now? I got a couple things I want to mention.
Okay, I'll let you mention them after I tell you about Luke Nowacki of Pinnacle Wealth Strategies, our Red Shovel supporter for many, many years. Let him create a financial plan for you, a business plan for your business, a trust for your family. Let Luke develop a comprehensive plan. If you call him at 248-663-4748, you got a complimentary consultation. Fire away with all your questions. Let Luke do his thing. He'll lay out a plan that fits your individual needs, and you will sign up. Ethical, knowledgeable, caring Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. Call him at 248-663-4748. Advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates. Of the names, products mentioned here, independent of Royal Alliance Associates. And interest rates, God, I saw they're in their mid-2s the other day, yeah. Record low. Not only will you get a record low if you mortgage if you call Hall Financial, but take advantage of their great service. David's been a part of our community for over 3 decades, built this business, maintained leadership in the mortgage market by offering better options, more personal attention, and getting thousands of the most satisfied clients. Hall Financial also has sustained its leadership, providing the fastest service in the business, generally 3 weeks or less. Mine was in 2 weeks. It's enabled them to gather those nearly 1,500 five-star reviews from Michigan homeowners. Go to davidhallmortgage.com to get started. Call 248-308-5000. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, or personal attention. And before you get too you've been listening to the No Filter Sports podcast. And before you get too deep into anything else, we have to say goodbye momentarily. I'll kind of stretch here for the next 15 seconds to our radio audience. That will be WCWA in Toledo. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear Rich Stranger talk about the legalities, not just of starting college football again, but of all the garbage going on at Michigan, Bo Schembechler, he played for him. What will his legacy be? We'll talk about all those things with Rich Stranger coming up. And you have been listening to the No Filter Sports podcast.
Can I mention one thing?
Yeah.
I am flattered by the number of emails and texts we've got the last week since I announced we were going to have an estate sale in October. Right. We're going to, and I'll let everybody know right now, we're going to have more information for you by September 15th, and we'll be able to give you all the details of where you go, how you arrive, and where you park, and what have you. So thank you very much. It was flattering. We've had over 500 emails and texts. It was unbelievable.
Well, I got one other thing about that. I mean, I'm used to getting this for free, my own private chat over Zoom with Denny McClain. If you think that I'm going to start paying to get a private chat with you, pal, when this other thing comes up, you got another thing.
Hey, Denny, speaking of your side ventures, how's that Cameo thing going? You doing any Cameo lately?
Yeah, I do about
Brandon 10 turned you on to Cameo, and I hope you're cashing in.
I do about 8 or 10 a week. It's unbelievable.
Come on, seriously? How much are you charging? 25 bucks?
You know what? Everybody's got a birthday. Everybody's got a wedding anniversary. It's unbelievable.
That's a cool idea.
It's funny. The people, and you know, the nicest thing about it is when they send you an email back or a text back and they say, boy, it was great. Because I don't just sit there and say happy birthday. I tell them stories about Cash and Gates Brown and all the other crazy.
Are you sending, Brandon, you want to do the mail bag now? What do you want to do?
Are you sending Brandon his 10% agents fee?
Oh, yeah, sure.
All right, go ahead.
As soon as he finds
out. Here's the mailbag.
Hit the heavy bag.
Yeah, it's going to be disappointing to you, Eli, because it's not a heavy bag today. You can tweet us at Eli Zarrett, at MU2Denny, or at Bob Page Sports. And the first tweet we have comes from, I want to make sure I pronounce the name right, Richard Vitale? No, what? Oh, it's Vital in Sarasota, Florida? Who wrote, check out Eli Zarrett, Bob Page Sports, and Denny McClain as they interviewed me today. A fun time. Always have been so cool to me. It was awesome, baby. That was actual tweet that came out the other day.
Seriously, hold on a second. I was thinking about that after we had him on last week. He was that. He hasn't changed.
Not an ounce.
He when he was 38 or 39, he became the Piston coach. He came to town when he was in his early 30s. He sounds the same. So maybe there's something to say for just having unbounded enthusiasm. Maybe you live long because he's 81.
Well, his voice
is just as bellicose as he ever was.
His voice has changed a little. And I would refer to, and this was a Twitter topic that I told, the now legendary, the now infamous interview that Al Ackerman, one of my mentors, did with Dick Vitale right after he took the Pistons job following his resignation at Detroit. Dick's voice does sound different. And folks, if you haven't seen this, you go right to YouTube and check it out. Back to the mailbag. Here's David Hubbard Jr. Best show yet, fellas, with Dick Vitale. Evoked so many emotions for me. Dickie V just opened the waterworks for me. Great, great one today, men. Love the show. Even you were palatable today, Bob.
Hold on a second. We get to comment after these. I thought that the first 10 minutes, him giving us the background The whole Jimmy V thing was just powerful. And I texted him. I said, man, you have not slowed down at all. And that was powerful. When he talked about calling him the next day, the inside, the tried to get the microphone in the audience before he got up and made the speech, how sick he really, really was. That was some heavy duty stuff. Okay, go ahead.
Maybe that's why the mailbag seems short, because Brandon didn't send me all the mailbag. I didn't see that. Jeff Witt writes from Atlanta, Georgia, where he now lives. Guys, thanks for the great interview with Dick Vitale. I was inspired to match Eli's donation.
Nice.
I hope the rest of the No Filter family and audience was inspired to give as well.
If you didn't listen, time out. Go to DickVitale.com. You buy his book for $29.95, and he will autograph with anything you say, just like Denny. You want him to write the preamble to the Constitution in there? He'll write it.
That's right. We'll do that.
Oh, and if you got any dough left over when you're done with that, Eli doesn't do this anymore, but don't forget, you can donate to this show. You know, you can send us some dough if you love the program, and you do that by going on our website. So I was going to say, all these transplanted Detroiters, Robbie Silverman in Phoenix, where he now lives, and he says, the timing of Denny's big estate sale is not the greatest. MLB, NHL, NBA, NFL playing over the weekends. So you have to be creative. Will Denny be taking people's temperatures at the door of his home? Will people be able to actually touch the items? Will they have to sign some kind of COVID-related waivers to get in? And he also suggests some copy for your sale flyers when they come out, Denny. And this is based upon some of your statements that Robbie has heard you make on this show in the past. He wants to know if you like this program or this promo. We got baseballs up the ass. We got bats up the ass. We got mini helmets up the ass. Does that make sense?
What are you talking about?
Denny always uses that phrase, up the you-know-what.
The term I use all the time is Bob would make a pimple on Gates Brown's ass. That's the thing.
My question is, what are the items? Is it going to be memorabilia? Are you signing balls? Are you selling couches and old suits?
It's a mixture of a lot of things. I mean, you know, 51 years of marriage is an awful lot of stuff here. And there's plenty for anybody and everybody. And just if you're looking, you're looking. That's all. But yes, we've got, there will be a nurse here. There's going to be some other people here to help with any kind of a situation like that. So, everybody masks. Has to wear a mask. Okay. You must wear a mask. No chance of getting in without it.
There you go.
And by the way, we're only going to let in 5, 6, 10 people at a time. If you sell any
memorabilia from the Eli and Denny show in the restaurant, you got to cut me in, okay? Remember those great hats we had and all that?
Remember that.
Go ahead, Bob.
Here's a former guest on our program, the South Florida attorney, Dan Wallach, who is a top sports gambling expert. You should go back and check out Dan's show if you didn't hear it the first time. And Dan writes, even Bob's ad reads are worth a listen. I almost want to buy a pre-owned vehicle from Feldman Auto. The 3-day return guarantee, count me in. Not sure which of their many locations to visit. That's how you know an ad read is really good. My car lease is up next July. Feldman will be my first call. They should pay you more, Bob, for your read. And Dan, don't forget, friends, you could also buy a Feldman Auto online.
Listen to that voice honed.
Well, I was a professional voiceover artist in New York. I should be doing this stuff.
What does professional voiceover mean?
That means represented by the legendary agency Abrams Artists on 7th Avenue for all of my voiceover work.
Representation is
my daughter's wedding through one project.
Okay, enough already. I can't. Oh, God. Go ahead.
I don't claim to be Ken Calvert, though. He made an amazing amount.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
All right, here we go. Website submissions at nofiltersportspodcast.com. Note from John Brennan Jr. says, simply, Eli owes Bob an apology. And then he sends a link to some of the rioting now associated with the Black Lives Matter moment. John, I appreciate that, but no apology from Eli is necessary. He just said he understands why I said what I did, and he sees some of this stuff going on, too.
And one or two rogue voices shouldn't destroy a worthwhile movement.
I agree with that.
What else do you
also have? 760-89-BALLS is a number for you folks to call if you want to text us or leave a message for us. We'll get it on the show if it's good enough. So I just want to mention this. Jack from Plymouth is another pissed off Tigers fan who's furious that they haven't called up Casey Mize. So we're 30, as we record this, Monday, 35 minutes away from this announcement by Avila. So
he's supposed to pitch Tuesday.
Is that what they're saying? Pitch Tuesday.
We got Rich Stranger dialing us up on Zoom, so let's talk to our guest. Rich Stranger, a tall, speedy wide receiver, as a prep player in Wisconsin, bulked up to near 300 pounds, went on to become an all Big Ten offensive tackle and honorable mention All-American at Michigan in the early 80s. He then became the second round pick of the Lions in 83, played 5 years there with Detroit before injuries derailed his career. Then went on to get his law degree, remains in practice in Lake Orion. So as we welcome Rich into the show, my first question, You were all Metro in Wisconsin. Why would you sacrifice catching passes and scoring touchdowns to dive into the scrum as an offensive lineman? What a crazy switch! What was that all about?
Oh, that it wasn't my choice. I came into Michigan as a tight end, and my freshman year, Bo discovered I couldn't run and catch very well. So he moved me into the offensive line. Unfortunately, two guys from my class, Bubba Paris and Ed Moransky, were already there and already getting quite a bit of playing time. So early in my career, until they graduated, I was their backup for the most part. I did get a lot of playing time, but yeah. I pretty much backed up Big Ed and Bubba for 3 years.
Good question. Would you, and I'm jumping way ahead at this point.
Are you doing that again? Why are you jumping ahead?
Because I'm old. I'm 76, going to be 77 next year. I got to try to stay ahead of the rubber ball.
Go ahead.
With everything that we know at this point in time, and maybe we don't certainly know enough, would you let your kids play college football today?
Yes, I would.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
You know, there's so much going on, Denny, as you explained, not only the concussion thing, COVID-19, but I wouldn't encourage him. I wouldn't push my child to play. If I had a son, I have a daughter, so I didn't have to make that decision. Yeah. But if they wanted to play, I would allow them. I wouldn't push them into it. That certainly I wouldn't do that. But if they wanted to play, I would.
I think Danny might have meant, would you let them play during the COVID situation? Let's say
that's what he's answering.
Well, of course.
That's what he's answering. It sure is.
Yeah. That's a tough one too. Kind of my general feeling on that, and I guess since I already started on the concussion matter, for both the COVID and the concussion matter, life in general has risk.
Yep.
Also, we could get hit by a car. We could get some other type of illness. It's where do you draw the line from allowing somebody to live their life and assume some of those risks to lock them up in a house where they can't do anything? And that's where I feel bad for some of these young people, not only athletes, but other people trying to maybe start a new business. It's one thing to be careful and look out for everybody's health, but we're preventing some of these young people from living their dreams. You know, some of the things that all of us, when we were younger, we were allowed to do. Where's that balance, right? You have, obviously you have to be responsible. You have to be careful. You got to protect everybody's health, but where do you draw that line? And
but here's the one thing, the car crash is already here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Meaning you don't know. There's a lot of uncertainty about whether you would contract COVID-19.
There's 170,000 dead. That's all I'm trying to say.
Well, okay, but Rich is entitled to his opinion, and many people.
No, I understand it. Rich, I'm on your side. That I would let my child make up the decision.
Well, then Rich, so you're saying then that you're comfortable that schools like Michigan and other schools would have taken the players' health into account, and they'll protect them if they get if they have, you know, permanent damage or anything from it. I guess, are you saying it's just the risk you will take, or you trust that the schools are doing everything they can and that they will be, that they'll follow through on it, let's say, if something bad happens?
There's only so much you can do, of course, when it's a contact sport, especially, right? Guys running into each other, sweating, you know, and that, from what I understand, they don't even know what the consequences are of exchanging, like, perspiration, that type of thing, how that affects the transmittability of COVID.
The big question now on the minds of all of our listeners, on you, everybody, and a big topic on this show most recently with our guests Jim Brandstatter and Stanley Edwards, is simply, what did Bo know and when did he know it?
You're not going to get me to say anything negative about Bo. I have the utmost respect for Bo. And I heard your show with both Brandy and Stan. And, you know, here's the way I look at the whole situation. I've been conflicted about this. And Eli, I heard on one of your shows too, it's like when Bob and I were first talking earlier, I didn't want to talk right away about it. And you said, one of your questions was, why wouldn't somebody want to talk about it? Number one, they're involved in the lawsuit, or number two, they're embarrassed. I'll give you a number three. Number three is just plain conflicted about the whole thing. Yeah. I've had a number of conversations with a lot of my former teammates. I've read a lot of articles about a lot of these guys that have come out and made these allegations against Dr. Anderson. And, you know, it runs the whole gamut. You have people who are alleging that Dr. Anderson really made explicit assaults against people. You have those people claiming things that were a little less obvious, like the digital rectal exam. Pretty much from the people I talked to and my experience, Dr. Anderson pretty much did that digital rectal exam to everybody. Now, was there any overt like sexual activity, no lengthy fondling or anything like that? But the bottom line is, it was a rectal exam, it was penetration. And I'm not a doctor. I guess the whole question for that would be, was that something that was ethical for a doctor to do to a 17 to a 23-year-old? Now, older people, we're all in that age now where some of those types of examinations are necessary to test for prostate cancer, things like that. But back then, was that something that was supposed to be done medically acceptable?
That's what I brought up. The defense for Bo, if there is one, is that naivete. Is it possible that he was told that's part of the exam? It only takes a second and that it's no big deal. People like you, and I don't blame you at all, and me too, because I love Bo Schembechler, you'd like to think there's an excuse out there that, yes, he knew about it, but he did not understand the severity or that it could cause trauma if indeed beyond Chuck Christian, who was one of your teammates, by the way, you played right with Chuck Christian, and his story is chilling, but I don't know whether anybody else was terrified to take a prostate exam and cost him his life someday down the road. I don't know if it was that there or that now maybe people are saying, wait a minute, he did that to me. Oh, I can get money for that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was going to ask Rich myself. Did you guys talk about that amongst yourselves, your teammates?
Back then, back in the day when it was going on, we did talk about it. It was kind of a, I don't want to say joke about it, but it was just kind of like expected, you know, oh, you're going to see Dr. Anderson, get ready, you know, that type of thing. I would sum it up as at the time back then when it was going on, we thought it was unusual. It's like, why would he be doing something like this? But hey, he's the doctor. He must know there must be a reason for him to do that.
Let me ask a question, and I'm not being accusatory. Please don't misunderstand me. If, in fact, you guys were talking about it, it had to be something that was going on, no? I mean, my point is, if it was being talked about in the locker room and on the field and wherever else, I mean, wouldn't you have to assume, and I'm not asking even maybe for a yes or a no, that Bo had to know what the hell was going on, at least would have thought of something going on.
You're right, Danny. And it's kind of my look at it is if we were thinking, oh, he's a doctor, it's a digital rectal exam, that he must know something. Bo was a football coach. He's not a medical expert either. Maybe he was thinking something to the same extent. That's my part of it, is that we all thought, okay, maybe this isn't quite what we've ever experienced before, but he's the doctor. He must know.
Bo was 50 years old in 1980, and he should have gotten one at the time. So maybe you're right about that, but can we touch on the other one that's really?
Yeah, I mean, Richie's made his points perfectly clear, and you absolutely can read between the lines and see that he does not feel he was abused by Dr. Anderson. You know, I mean, so yeah, let's move on. You want to talk about the current head football?
Well, I'm just curious about the whole legal aspects of this canceling the season of the Big Ten and the Pac-12. Our theory here, my theory, is that it's kind of Corona, but it's really the union. The players, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are very close to making demand. They made demands for unionization, in a sense, being recognized, getting some money, and moving forward. What we know the NCAA is going to do. Do you think that that's why one of the main reasons why this was canceled? Because just giving them medical protocols wasn't enough. Players wanted more than that with the United We Stand and the various action groups that were created.
Yeah, there's so much going on. And unfortunately, in this day and age, if somebody can't just take one issue and concentrate on that, they always have to like add more things into it. So you're right. It's not just the COVID thing. It's unionizing college athletes. It's bringing in a whole lot of other kind of maybe related issues, right? Because it is, if they want to unionize, it's because they want to do that to protect themselves, not only from things like COVID, but from other kinds of that they think maybe aren't fair that's done to athletes by college administrations. I'm kind of from the old school. I was the youngest of four kids, foundry jobs and everything. They didn't have the advantage of a scholarship. They worked foundry jobs, things like that, to pay for school. My sister joined the Air Force. She had the GI Bill help her get through school. So I didn't expect anything extra, and I was just happy to be vacation paid for.
Rich, let me ask you about so many schools and so many different organizations are stating that they're going to have people sign contracts when they walk into the stadium that they will not sue if, in fact, they wind up with the virus. Does that contract have any standing at all?
Waivers are kind of a gray area of law, Denny. That's a good point. To a certain extent, heck you, but there's always exceptions to the rule. That's one thing I found since I've been practicing law. Even when I represent certain clients, you think you find a good statute or a good case law to represent your client well, and then you keep digging. And yeah, there are certain exceptions. Some of the things that maybe come off the top of my head is maybe somebody will claim duress, didn't really sign it on their own free will. Somebody kind of pressured them into signing it, or they represented it to be something that it really wasn't. You know, we're all supposed to read stuff before we sign it, but if somebody has more experience, the person, and they're trying to negotiate with them, sometimes the law says, look, you're an experienced business person and you're talking to just Joe Schmo from the street. You have to explain things more to him because you're not operating at arm's length.
Yeah, I was trying to say, I got a great idea. Since we have one of the top offensive linemen in the history of Michigan football, why don't we talk Michigan football instead? What is going on, A, with Harbaugh? Is he the right guy? Was he ever for this job? And what's up with this Ohio State embarrassment?
Yeah, it's frustrating. Jim was a freshman my fifth year at Michigan. So he was on the team. He didn't see the field much that year, if at all, if I recall. So I do know Jim. We were teammates. I still support him. It's frustrating not beating Ohio State all these years. There was that one year where I think we got a little bit of the raw idea when on that fourth down play when right. we stopped. It's a tough question to answer, but I overall support Jim.
Why can't they beat Ohio State? What's wrong?
Talent and recruiting. Come on, they got better players. That's all. Michigan.
Then why aren't they? Then Eli, since you seem to know it all today, why aren't Michigan recruiting these guys and signing them instead of Ohio State? If you want to take that tack.
Recruiting.
Can't answer that. I think it started before Harbaugh got here. But yes, very surprised that he can't, that he hasn't been able to compete with them, especially with how hard he tried to recruit and all the tricks and the summer camps and all the sleepovers and everything. I'm surprised that he wasn't able to break through. But Rich is more of an expert on that than I am, obviously.
I was a little bit disappointed early on with some of the development of players. I thought they brought some good talent in, and maybe the development of some of those players wasn't up to par, especially on the offensive line. I guess that's who I watched the most, of course. But and I the game has probably passed me up a bit too, because I'm still old school where I like to see guys stay low, fire off the ball, get movement. But now they coach these offensive linemen, even though they're bigger and stronger and faster, they kind of stand up and position block. You know, I'm like, why don't they teach them to fire off the ball and get movement like they used to? And but again, that's probably because the game has passed me up.
Yeah, well, you saw the kid from your area out there where you live in northern Oakland County, Rocco Spindler, Mark's son, just signed with Notre Dame instead of Michigan. And his quote, Notre Dame has a better reputation for developing offensive linemen. Were you shocked as I was about that?
Yeah. I mean, we had Jerry Hanlon and Paul Shudell and Elliot Uzlak. And, you know, we were always known to have great offensive line. I mean, and I came in my fifth year after backing up Bubba and Big Ed all those years. And, you know, they turned me into a offensive tackle just in one season, you know. So that was good coaching.
Speaking of good coaching, you played for Bo, the college coach from the Mid-American Conference, who built the offensive line with the help of the people you said. You played also in the pros for Monty Clark, who was an offensive line genius, we were told, with the Miami Dolphins. So you did get to play for some great offensive line coaches. Who was the best one? Could Bo hold a candle to Monty or vice versa? And did you learn
Jerry
more
Hanlon,
from the
I
other?
Guess. Yeah. Right? Jerry?
Bo was an old lineman too, wasn't he? Like a 180-pound offensive lineman.
Well,
yeah. Yeah, Bo did spend a lot of time with the offensive line. Yeah, I was fortunate to have a lot of good ones. You know, Monty, even though he was a head coach with the Lions when I was there, and he was an offensive line coach for the Dolphins, his offensive line coach, Fred Hoagland, was an excellent coach. Ended up going to the Giants after the Lions, and I'm coaching with Parcells and won a couple Super Bowls under Coach. I was fortunate to have, you know, Jerry Hanlon, Paul Shudell, Elliot Uzlak.
You know what I find sensational about your career, as I read it last night? You never missed a day of practice in 5 years. How the hell could you play football every day?
With all those injuries, you didn't miss a day of practice. That can't be. He missed seasons.
He didn't.
Yeah, early in my career, in my college career, I was pretty injury free. In fact, I didn't get hurt to the extent where I had to miss practice until the Rose Bowl my fifth year. I got hurt in the Rose Bowl. Blew up my knee in the Rose Bowl. But prior to that, I never had an injury that was enough to keep me out of a game. Of course, my NFL career was a little bit different. My second year in the league, I earned the starting left tackle spot and made it through preseason and blew up my knee the very first game of the season, the first regular season game against the 49ers.
84, and
so yeah. I take credit for the Lions getting Lomas because they weren't sure if I was going to come back that year. They drafted Lomas that offseason.
You mentioned the 83 Rose Bowl. So I'm thinking about this last night. January 1st, 1983, you blow out your ankle in the seventh or the third or fourth play of the game. And then the last game of the year on December 31st, 83, you're with the Lions and Eddie Murray misses the field goal. So your season started with a Rose Bowl loss and January 1st, Rose Bowl loss, December 31st, NFL playoff loss. Unique.
Yeah. And that's another thing, just with my even getting the opportunity to play in the NFL, you know, backing up Big Ed and Bubba for 3 years, then having a pretty decent senior year, but blowing out my knee in the Rose Bowl, I pretty much thought my chances of playing in the NFL were over. So I was, even though my NFL career didn't go as I would have hoped, I was still fortunate to even get that opportunity and play. I played 6 years, five for the Lions and one for the Buffalo Bills. I feel blessed in a lot of ways.
How frustrating was it, Rich, playing for that franchise and having your agent deal with Russ Thomas, fighting with him over contracts and stuff? What's been wrong with the Lions? What's wrong with the Lions now? And where are they going?
I heard your show with Eric Kippel, and he said he didn't have any problems with Russ. And quite frankly, I really didn't either. I wasn't there long enough because I signed my rookie contract, and I signed 4 years with an option. And instead of renegotiating my option year, I was hoping to have a good fifth year and then, you know, renegotiate at the end of it. And unfortunately, I blew out my knee that year. And that's when I ended up going to Buffalo for a year. So that was my third knee injury. And I still thought I could play, of course, but the NFL had
but you still follow thoughts. The Lions? What's wrong with them? As I said, what's going on with them? How bad was it when you were there?
When I went to the Bills, it was right before they went to their first of four Super Bowls.
And you were done at that time. They cut you, right? You never played for the Bills because your knee was so bad, right?
Right. I was there a year with them, so I practiced with them. I came back. I was healthy enough to play. They never put me on the active roster, but I was healthy enough to practice like mid-October. So I practiced with the team the entire 88 season. Then I went back to camp in 89, and they cut me in camp. But so I was there a whole year, and I was able to see that product that they were producing. And they had Cornelius Bennett, they had Jim Kelly, they had Thurman Thomas, they had Bruce Smith, Andre Reed. So that, and I know I'm missing somebody, but that's five stars right there. When we were with the Lions, we had Billy Sims and maybe Doug English or something. We had maybe two or three stars. Where in Buffalo, there were, I named five, but I'm missing some. So they're probably seven, eight stars. So that I think that's one of it. And that's probably goes to spending money, right? Getting the proper talent there.
My last question for you has got to do with Russ Thomas. I've never heard anybody really publicly rip him. My question is,
what? What are you talking about?
Everybody we have on the show says nice things about him. My question is, how the hell did he get such a bad reputation?
Well, he
this is go ahead.
He did have tight pockets, right? He didn't spend the money, obviously. And
well, I played for one of those guys too, but I didn't hate him.
Yeah. Like I said, I didn't hate him either, but I do know. And I think Eric touched on it too, where instead of maybe, well, like the Billy Sims issue, I thought Eric made a good point on that. He hurt his knee. You know, he was contemplating whether he was going to come back or not, or cash in on the Lloyd's of London insurance policy. And if the Lions would have maybe eaten that cost, he would have come back. I didn't even know that until Eric mentioned that, but I thought he made a good point. It's like, you know, now $1 million is nothing. Back in the 80s when we played, that was huge money.
This is tough interview. So we're asking Rich Stranger about Bo, who he loves, and digital rectal exams. We're asking about Russ Thomas and the Lions. What's wrong with them? Can we get throw him a softball like, hey, how's your law practice doing or something? Because these are tough.
Well, I got one for Eli. Okay,
difficult people.
So Rich, listen to this then. So now you were a late student in law school, and I wanted to know, since you were very late to law school, why you decided you wanted to become a lawyer to begin with?
That's a good question, Bob. It wasn't like a lifelong dream of mine. I had a number of jobs. I had some sales jobs. I worked at Oakland County. I worked for Brooks. Pretty much everything I was doing after football, I loved working for Brooks, but it was kind of a job where I didn't see any room for advancement. All the management people in Oakland County that were ahead of me were close to the same age and everything. So I actually asked Brooks one day, I said, I want to kind of improve my life here. I don't know how to do it. I said, I'm thinking of just going to law school. I don't necessarily know if I want to practice law, but I think it would help me, whatever I do, having a law degree. And he encouraged me to do it. So I took the LSATs. I did okay. I didn't do great. And then I applied at U of D, Wayne State, and Detroit College. And I didn't hear anything from Detroit College about a week before classes started. And I get a letter saying you're accepted. And I'm like, well, here we go. So I kept working during the days, went to school at night, and finished up. And since I was already with Oakland County, I went to the prosecutor's office for a couple of years. And then I ended up going to Butts Along for 5 years. And now I've been on my own since 2006.
That's cool. So, but consider this now. Okay, Detroit College of Law, where you went, the year after you graduated, was purchased by Michigan State University. It's their law school now. I could see this mammoth 6'8", 300-pound guy wearing this big Michigan letter jacket walking across the Michigan State campus every day, which you would have done.
The actual law school is like center field to Comerica Park. I think there's a plaque out there somewhere. It was on Elizabeth Street, right down there in the area. So they were actually, my last semester there, they were already starting to demolish the building. I remember there were guys up on the roof with jackhammers and stuff, and dust was flying down from the ceiling. And then my very last semester, we rented some rooms from U of D, University of Detroit, and down on Joseph Campo. That's where I finished up.
Great covering you at Michigan with the Lions, and you remain a good friend, and thanks for answering some tough questions.
You're always one of the best, Rich. Yes, you're always one of the best guys.
All right. Thanks to
Rich. Thank you, guys. I feel the same about you.
All right. Well, that was a good show today, guys. I'm going to take off. I won't be here Thursday. You'll fill in admirably, I'm sure, without Ron Cameron as a guest this time, and guys again on Monday. So have a great weekend.
We may get stuck Wednesday night, pal. You better tune in to be sure.
Everybody have a great week, Eli. Have a great vacation. Stay safe, folks.
Okay.